Good morning. It is Sunday, March 24th, 2013. This is Weekend Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. We begin this morning's program with a story about a new group in an even newer building. Recently, Ozarks at Large's Timothy Dennis visited a former church building in downtown Fayetteville, where the local nonprofit Feed Fayetteville is creating a new center for operations.
This was the scene last Thursday when 60 to 70 volunteers from Sam's Club convened at this site on Locust Street near the downtown Fayetteville Square. The former church is a white bricked two-story building that was constructed in 1945, but it will soon be home to a local foods campus of sorts for the local group Feed Fayetteville. Adrienne Schoenfeld is the executive director of the local nonprofit.
There was a need in the community for a centralized place where people could come and have education and resources and just community efforts combined, because we were all kind of out in the community doing our own thing, and then we didn't really have a centralized location. So this is the embodiment of every activity that we did last year, so we can all come together in one place.
Feed Fayetteville, along with its parent organization Feed Communities, is part of several food security programs in the area. Programs such as Canning Hunger, where produce from local gardens and the Fayetteville Farmers Market are preserved for winter use at community meals programs in the city. With the new facility, the group will be able to have that canning operation on site. Another program among the many that will benefit from the new space is one called Care Cropping,
which is a gleaning program that we do at the farmers market. And we were doing it out of the back of a car last summer. And so this building will help us be more sustainable and just keep the food fresh longer and be able to give a better variety of food instead of taking one location 400 pounds of squash like we did last summer. So it'll help us be more sustainable in our actions. We also have cooking classes that we now do at different Head Starts and churches and around town, so we'll be able to do all those here. And then we'll also have an on-site snap garden, which is we're really excited about doing a little urban ag project and growing food with SNAP participants right here on our campus.
Outside, volunteers proceeded to build several beds for the SNAP gardens. Jack Amerson is one of those volunteers. He tells me how these beds for fresh veggies are being built.
We're moving soil into the mulch gardens so that we can create a layer of topsoil here to grow fruits and vegetables with, and the community can come in and weed and feed and water and pick vegetables out.
But because these are just the first steps in renovating the site, the gardens aren't being built in a permanent fashion.
And we're using straw bales and doing raised beds because we don't really have the permanent master landscape plan down yet. So this year we're just showing that people can grow with limited resources and just pop up in a parking lot, basically.
Showing how to grow a garden in new spaces is one thing that Feed Fayetteville staff hope to teach the community. Melissa Terry is the program coordinator for parent organization Feed Communities. She says that both organizations were formed out of the fruits of a community stakeholders meeting 2 years ago. Terry says that Denise and Hershey Garner called the meeting in response to high statistics of childhood hunger in Arkansas.
Numbers. And so Denise and Hershey convened a group of stakeholders at St. Paul's Episcopal Church, just to see if we could figure out some basic starting points of, like, is community hunger solvable? What is going on? Why are the statistics so high that one out of every four kids in Washington County is listed as food insecure? And so we had intended for about 20 people to be at the stakeholders meeting, and then in the end, there were 60.
But to lower the number of area residents who are food insecure, the group had to approach the problem with efficiency in mind. So organizers mapped out all of the separate community meals and food resources that were in the area, mainly to determine where there was overlap of services or where partnerships could be beneficial.
The Food Hub is the physical space that represents the mental work that we did last year of aggregating mentally and by conversations, like all the different food groups that we could think of in community kitchens and whatnot. And then as we progressed, we realized, like Adrienne was saying, that we needed a physical space where we could just be a library, a resource, a base camp, a community garden.
Not only are the different programs Feed Fayetteville sponsors designed for efficiency in the community food systems, but the facility is being designed with that conservation in mind. One of the projects that volunteers were working on during the warm March afternoon was the construction of several rain barrels. Volunteer Gary Fisher from Charlotte, North Carolina, says that building one of the 50-gallon plastic rain collectors is simple.
It is pretty easy. All you do is take and cut the top off, drill a hole in the bottom to put the spigot, so when you get the water in, you have an overflow valve on top. And that's pretty much it.
But conservation is only one aspect that drives an organization like Feed Fayetteville. The community aspect is not only where the group focuses its aspirations to help ensure food security, but the community also plays a key role in helping the organization accomplish that mission. For example, the organization didn't purchase its new home. Instead, Feed Fayetteville founders Denise and Hershey Garner purchased the property and gave a 20-year lease to Feed Communities to use the space as offices for the two organizations. But Schoenfeld says that the community helps the organization in other ways as well.
And like Melissa was talking about the garden tool share, we don't even have garden tools ourselves yet, so we are actually borrowing from Tricycle Farm. So we all work together. And I think that just the, by definition, a nonprofit serves the community and the communities we work together. So we definitely rely on community support for everything that we do. And we appreciate all the support that we get too.
The idea of the community giving back was a visible characteristic during the volunteer day. Many of the volunteers were Sam's Club associates who were otherwise in the area for training at the retailer's home office in Bentonville. Robert Cotter, from the Los Angeles suburb of Riverside, California, says that giving back to community organizations is inherent in the company's corporate culture.
It's kind of a way of life with Sam's Club. It's just kind of a way you pick it up when you go on. You see how everybody else is, you know, contributing to the community and stuff, and you just want to be a part of it. It's just part of our culture that we give back and stuff and that. And part of our culture is, you know, we all opted to stay an extra day, and, you know, we could be going home today, but we decided to stay and give back. And this was something that our office set up for us because, you know, we just, like I said, we want to contribute back to our community. Our home office is right here, and we want to give back, so it's all part of it.
The connotation of community, as it relates to sharing, not only applies to sharing resources within a distinct geographical or municipal region, but it also brings with it the notion of sharing those ideas with other populations and other communities. Jack Hickey, an associate from Battle Creek, Michigan, is putting a fresh coat of varnish on a shelf that will be used to store canned produce. He says that he doesn't know if there are similar food security programs in his area.
Oh, but I'm going to go back and find out. I know we have farmers markets, but we're directly involved with the community like this and learning about the percent of children that go without fruit and vegetables here in this particular county and in Fayetteville was surprising and alarming, and now I want to go back in my community and see if I have the same thing.
Melissa Terry says that the community ideas don't even need to be shared as far as Michigan to make an impact.
So ultimately in 2 years it would be great if we had snap gardens in all five cities up the corridor, Fayetteville, Bentonville, Rogers, Springdale, and Siloam Springs. So that's our aim, and our intention is for a regional expansion to work with any community that's interested in cultivating their own version of Feed Fayetteville. If the city of Springdale wanted to support and build capacity for the Growing Healthy Springdale Initiative, for example, then we would love to work with them and transfer our assets and the case studies and whatnot.
But so, for now, Terry and Schoenfeld say that the organization is focused on strengthening its current programs and operations and moving into its new home. Terry says that not only do they hope to have a completed master architecture plan in the coming year, but the group also hopes to soon publish its first issue of Edible Ozarkansas, a quasi-syndicated publication that features region-specific articles dealing with local food issues. But before that happens, they have to clean and finish converting the former church into the community center that they envision. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Timothy Dennis.
It's about 16 minutes after 9. This is Weekend Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. This week on our daily edition of Ozarks at Large, we had a bit of fun as spring arrived. You remember, spring came the day before the snow. My colleague Antoinette Grajeda and I convinced Robert Ginsberg, who is the host of Shades of Jazz on KUAF Friday and Saturday nights at 10, to go outside with us to talk about hiking. Not only does Robert know a lot about jazz, but he's an avid outdoorsman, and for years he owned the outdoors-inspired store Uncle Sam's.
We're outside just hours after it officially became spring. And for this spring-themed part of our program, we've enlisted a friend, an avid outdoors person, for some advice.
You may know Robert Ginsberg is the host of Shades of Jazz on KUAF Friday and Saturday nights at 10, or as the president of the North Arkansas Jazz Society, but he's an experienced hiker, and for years he owned the outdoor-inspired business Uncle Sam's.
We've turned to Robert to get some tips on getting out this spring, specifically taking a hike.
And, well, Robert, welcome to our outside studio.
Thank you. I like it, Kyle. We're right here by this, by the trail, the Fayetteville Trail, and there's a lot of great urban opportunities to get outdoors. And I'm glad you guys are doing this spot, because this is probably the best, or certainly one of the two best times of year to really experience the outdoors. Spring is just so wonderful in Northwest Arkansas.
Well, we have some questions.
We do. Kind of what inspired this is, I was thinking last year when you took us to hike the water to the waterfalls, there were tips that you were giving me that I had never considered because I'd never really been hiking. So for our listeners who maybe are considering going out and hiking for maybe the first time, or maybe the first time in a long time, novices, what are some tips you can give them for getting prepared?
Well, as the season wears on, these things become more pertinent. Right now, one of the reasons it's so great to get out right now is the poison ivy's not really up that bad, and the ticks aren't out, and the rattlesnakes aren't out. So it's ideal in many ways, but very soon, in fact, even on a warm day in early spring, you'll have ticks that will be out and about. So that's a real obvious precaution you need to take in terms of hiking in this part of the world. And the simple way to deal with that, if you're going to be in grassy areas or in brushy areas or anywhere where ticks might be, is just to wear long sleeves and long pants. And it's a lot more comfortable to do that now, obviously, than in the middle of summer. And if you do that, and if it really gets into tick season, you can actually duct tape your pant leg down at the bottom so that they can't get through that. So that's a simple precaution to take. Poison ivy is not as big a factor now, although you can get poison ivy all winter if you handle the vine. So being aware of what the plant itself looks like, and particularly what the vine looks like, it's different from the Virginia creeper. It's got a hairier kind of a texture. So those are two things that I would definitely pay attention to. But those are issues that become more and more important as the weather warms up.
Say it is July or August and it's hotter, and people think the idea of long sleeves and long pants is repulsive in the high heat. Then what do you do to protect yourself?
Then you turn to bug repellent, and it's definitely effective. There's a lot of people that have skin sensitivity and they don't want to use bug repellent. And if you follow the old timers, you'll see that rarely do you see them walking around in shorts and t-shirts. And it's for good reason, because really the best protection is just to cover up. But they've come out with so many new kinds of repellents now that are not DEET, which is the chemical that seems to be most effective, but that also people seem to be the most sensitive to. There's more natural bug repellents that work fairly well, just not quite as long. So there's options there.
So if I'm headed out on a hike, what do I need to take with me?
Always water. Water is essential, even this time of year when it's cool and we don't tend to sweat as much. You can get into some rigorous activities and you need to keep yourself hydrated. And then just kind of the basics, you know, you want to bring something to eat. It can be simple as a granola bar, or, you know, you can, depending on your appetite and how long you're going to be out, you can bring enough food for a day or an evening. I always like to bring a windbreaker, or that will double as a rain jacket, because sometimes the weather can be unpredictable. And then the other things that just can enhance the experience would be a small pair of binoculars, a camera, of course, and now just about everybody that has a phone has a camera, so that's become easier and easier. But those are some of the things I like. I usually wear a hat as well, just to kind of get a little sun protection. And that's the other element that kind of dovetails in with covering up for bugs and so forth. These days, more and more people are concerned about overexposing themselves to the sun. So you can now get bug repellents that also have sunscreen in them as well.
Okay, so let's say someone is planning on one of three different kind of hikes. And, of course, we've got the Razorback Greenway, and it's almost connected. So there's all sorts of trails. But let's say someone wants to hike something that's a little bit more or a little less urban than the trail system we have. What's an easy, moderate, and maybe more experienced trail that you might suggest that people might not know about?
Lake Wilson, which is off of Morningside Drive outside of Fayetteville, has a beautiful trail that goes around it. And it covers a lot of different terrain. It starts right there at the lake, and it kind of follows the lake along through the woods, but then it goes up a drainage, and it changes the geology. It goes from giant sandstone blocks into a limestone area where there's a lot of fossils and just interesting little places to crawl and climb around. It's really close. I mean, you're still essentially in town, but you're definitely more in the wilderness. And always a great guide for trails, whether they be urban trails or out in the boonies, is the Tim Ernst guidebooks, which there's one book that's geared more towards just day hikes. There's wonderful hiking now, as there is in Fayetteville, also in the Bentonville area and Rogers as well. And then all around Lake Beaver Lake, there's great trails. And a perfect day, I would say, for someone who is not that familiar with the area, doesn't want to get lost, but wants to see a lot, and this is a trip that I still do often, is from the Fayetteville, Rogers, Bentonville area, you can get to War Eagle Mill in no time at all, which is a really charming little place. It's been there forever and ever, and you can get lunch there, go up on the third floor. You can come out to the bridge and check out the old bridge and even hike down the river a ways. But then if you get back in your car and head just a mile or two up the road into the Hobbs State Park area, they have an amazing visitor center now, which has a lot of natural history about Northwest Arkansas, a lot of hands-on displays for kids, which are great. And don't forget to look up into the ceiling. It's covered with these wonderful sculptures of birds. And that can give you some inspiration to step back outside within a stone's throw, practically, of the visitor center at Hobbs. There's a couple of great trails. One of them is called Shattuck's Hollow, which is a loop, which I always like doing loops, but it's still only, I think it's less than 2 miles, but it takes you from the road down to the river, I mean down to the lake, excuse me, and then back around. Very short and wonderful hike. Kids can do it. And then just further down the road, there's another great trail, if you're more ambitious, that's called Pigeon Roost. The thing I like about Pigeon Roost is, again, it takes you through a myriad of different terrains, takes you down to the lakes, to some beautiful secluded places, and it's an 8-mile loop. But if you get about halfway in, or maybe just a short ways in, and you decide you don't want to do the 8 miles, there's a cutoff that turns it from an 8-mile hike into a 4-mile hike. So those are all, I think, some of my favorite trails, because you can get to them in a hurry. You don't have to be really experienced in the area to find them.
So if people want more information, is there a group or a website that they can contact?
There's a couple of groups that would be great for people that are really wanting to get into hiking more seriously. The Ozark Society and Ozark Highland Trails group, you can look them both up. They do organized hikes, and they grade them from, you know, in terms of how hard or easy they are. So that's a great way to kind of springboard into the whole hiking in the Ozarks.
Thank you, Robert.
Thank you.
That's the song El Camino by James Super Chicken Johnson. He's from Clarksdale, Mississippi, and will be one of the headliners for this year's Blues in the Natural State Festival in downtown Fayetteville, Friday and Saturday, April 5th and 6th. Super Chicken is scheduled to go on stage at George's Majestic Lounge on the Friday night of the festival, beginning at 10:30. And we caught up with the man in charge of this year's Blues in the Natural State Festival, Roger Plour. And we asked him about the event and specifically about Super Chicken.
I got an opportunity to see him at the Eureka Springs Blues Weekend a couple of years ago. And he really knows how to engage the crowd, and people that night at the Basin Park Hotel were just loving his performance. He's a very, you know, interesting guy, you know, as well. He's a self-taught musician, and he's got kind of a style that is cool and gritty with deep roots and sort of traditional country blues. He is also a guitar builder. I don't know if you know that, but he tends to build his guitars from recycled parts.
One of the great things about this blues festival, Blues in the Natural State Festival, is that it's multi-venue. On Friday night alone, you're at three different places on Dixon Street in Fayetteville.
Yeah, and actually it's three different places, but there's actually four music
stages. Yeah,
four stages. So, so that's very exciting. The other thing that we've done this year is we tried this concept last year when the festival was one day, and we had four music rooms, and we sold tickets on the basis of, you know, a wristband that would get you into any of the venues, and that seemed to work really well for us. So what we're very happy this year that we were able to expand the festival to 2 days, and on Saturday, well, on Friday we'll be using the four music stages, but on Saturday we're going to be actually using six stages, and between the Friday and Saturday this year, we have 24 acts booked at these six music venues. So we were, and I have to say that we were only able to do that with some strong support of some sponsors this year. Primarily, Walmart came in and helped us out tremendously and very generously with being able to produce this festival, as did the City of Fayetteville, the Advertising and Promotion Commission.
I love the lineup because it is a great mix. We mentioned Super Chicken, who's from Clarksville, Mississippi, but there's a great mix of local, regional, and then the national. I mean, people who go to live music around here will recognize a lot of the names. Leah and the Mojo Doctors, R.J. Michaud, Sarah Hughes, Earl and Them. You really put together a lineup that is familiar and adventurous at the same time.
Well, thank you. That was the goal, because one of the things that we wanted to do is we don't want to have the same people play, you know, the festival year after year, and we'd like to introduce artists that people coming to the festival, whether they're local or if they're coming from Fort Smith or Little Rock, perhaps might not have heard of this particular artist or act, but once they get here, I have to say that I think at any one of the venues that festival goers choose to go and listen to music, I think they're going to be treated to a real quality performance. And I think that goes back to, you know, going back a little bit, one of the problems with the blues genre is that, you know, unless you're a B.B. King or a Keb Moe or Bonnie Raitt, most of these artists are not household names. So, you know, you have to be really, you know, interested and a real blues fan to even know who a lot of these artists are.
You know, that's what's great about a festival. Is you may be drawn in because you know one or two of the acts, but I think it's even more exciting for a music fan to you know, kind of go in not knowing who Ernest Guitar Roy is, say, and then be blown away.
I wanna talk.
Ernest was at our festival last year, and just as you said, most people had no idea who he was. But he did such a tremendous job had for us last year. The performance was, was outstanding. People were, talking about it for, several months after the fact. And that's why we had him, asked him to come back, this year.
And occasionally something can happen that's almost transformative. I remember I didn't know who Roy Rogers was several years ago at the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival. I'm walking out for the day, and the blues tent's still going, and it's Roy Rogers. And he has the entire crowd with him. And, I mean, it doesn't happen that often, but when something like that can happen, it's magical.
Absolutely, and I think that we're going to and hopefully see that with Super Chicken's performance, because that's what he has the ability to do. He really, as I mentioned before, really has the ability to, he really engages the audience, and they feel that they're part of the whole performance, whether they're dancing like chickens or, hooting and hollering and, all that kind of stuff. One other new thing that we're trying this year.
Oh, yes.
Is on Saturday afternoon, we're trying to do we're calling it the Afternoon Blues, and it's going to be a performance, more of a listening type performance at Walton Arts Center's Star Theater. And headlining that afternoon is Ray Bonneville, who's from Austin, Texas. And he was the 2012 International Blues Challenge winner in the solo duo category. And I don't know if you know about Ray, but he's Canadian-born, U.S. raised. He's sort of a blues-influenced singer, songwriter, guitarist, and harmonica player. He's kind of a one-man band,
Yeah.
And, he's kind of known for his loose, bluesy, swampy kind of vibe, and he plays a special kind of blend of blues and Americana music where every song does tell a very specific story, and it kind of leads the listener oftentimes into figuring out either the story itself or what the message is that he's trying to get across.
Crossing flowers by the side of the road in the hour of long shadows. Fading name, hard to read, lost in among the weeds. I see dice rolling.
Roger, thanks so much for your time, and you and your colleagues all there at the Society, thanks for putting this together.
Hey, thank you for having me on the show again, Kyle.
Roger Plouard is with the Ozark Blues Society, and he talked to me about the 11th annual Blues in the Natural State Festival taking place in downtown Fayetteville, Friday, April 5th and Saturday, April 6th. Also playing will be two-time Grammy nominee John Lee Hooker Jr. He'll close the festival on Saturday night. You can find out more about the festival at the website ozarkbluessociety.org and follow the links. Later in the program, by the way, we'll have a question about the festival that could help you win a weekend pass to the Blues in the Natural State Festival, April 5th and 6th.
Have you ever asked yourself, am I going crazy?
The notion is that if you see things or hear things, you're going mad. But as a physician, I have to try and define what's going on and to reassure people that they're not going insane.
I'm Guy Raz, the place between madness and sanity. It's next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
The TED Radio Hour, today at noon on KUAF 91.3 FM. This is a busy time of year. Well, what part of the year isn't busy? But Meredith Martin-Mote says it's time to chill out.
everywhere you look, you're probably reminded of the need to eat better, exercise more, and seek out ways to reduce stress and tension in your life. Here's a confession. Sometimes just hearing the word healthy stresses me out. I'm pretty sure that that's not, you know, healthy. And here's something else that stresses me out. People telling me I need to decrease my stress level. That really stresses me out. In the deepest part of my being, I want nothing more than to be healthy. I want this for myself, but even more so for my 3-year-old twin sons. At their age, all waking hours revolve around nonstop play and this endless quest for bliss and joy. But it won't be long before they're adults with their own complex and busy lives. Things will get intense. They'll forget to take time for the small stuff, maybe start eating cookies for lunch. After all, if they perpetually see their role models put their own health on the back burner, chances are they will too. So if I care so much about health, why does all this talk of improvement make me feel anxious? I think it comes down to this. Far too often, discussions of health and healing sound more like bullet points on a checklist rather than a fundamental shift in the way we approach our daily lives. In other words, just something else to add to that growing list of things that I never seem to accomplish. It makes me feel like I'm going to fail before I even start. Don't get me wrong, I love a good to-do list, and I'd be absolutely lost without mine. Every morning, I get out a piece of paper. At the top, I write, make to-do list. Underneath that, I jot down a series of items like finish column, update blog, schedule vet appointments, take children to the library, do dishes. After my list is complete, I return to the top, and I ever so joyfully cross off that first item. Such fulfillment. But all joking aside, I've been writing put away clean laundry on my to-do list since my kids were born 3 years ago, and I almost never get around to crossing it off. What I'm really looking for is a full-on paradigm shift, a version of health much more nuanced than, say, caloric intake. And I need a new language to help me get there. So the other night, I tried out a yoga class. I've always been curious about yoga's holistic approach to body awareness and acceptance of life in the moment. But honestly, it was the free introductory class that really drew me in. I came home feeling somewhat relaxed and encouraged. I've got to put that on my to-do list for next week, I thought to myself. If you're one of those people who finds motivation in berating yourself with how far you have to go, then more power to you. It's taken me years to figure this out, but for me, that's just a waste of my energy. I've found only one thing capable of fueling my burgeoning commitment to greater health: accepting where I'm at. These hips may make it impossible to fit into the clothes of my youth, but they're the product of growing 2 babies, and for that reason, I'm kind of proud of them. And yes, my stress level sometimes goes through the roof, but it's typically the result of time spent doing one of the hardest jobs known to humankind, parenting. After all, if I wasn't stressed out at least part of the time, I wouldn't be paying attention. Acknowledging these things doesn't mean I want to remain perpetually out of shape with a frazzled, stressed out brain. In fact, it's just the opposite. Pondering obligations of meeting some kind of health checklist tend to make me feel deflated, even angry. Learning to be okay with where I'm at actually gives me energy. After all, health isn't some kind of stack of folded laundry waiting to be put away. It's a gradual process that requires not just effort, but love, patience, perseverance, and any of those other large order concepts that can't be restricted to a to-do list. When I got home from my first yoga class, my sons met me at the door. "You went to your yo-yo class?" they asked me, faces filled with curiosity. I thought about correcting them, but I decided that yo-yo class is a much better phrase for my state of health these days. Since that day, I've made some slow but steady progress. Coming to grips with the current version of myself has been unexpectedly energizing. Sometimes I don't even mind trading ice cream for veggies. More often than not, I actually look forward to my morning workouts, and sometimes, I find the strength to take long, deep breaths when I get angry, rather than mimic the toddler tantrum behavior I'm supposed to be discouraging. And that all seems pretty healthy. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Meredith Martin-Motes.
Meredith Martin Motes is the editor of The Boiled Down Juice and the director of the McElroy House Organization for Folklife, Oral History, and Community Action. She's a regular contributor to Ozarks at Large. It is Sunday, March 24th, 2013. This is Weekend Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me is Becca Martin Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Have you ever heard of a group called Harmony from Mountain View?
Yes. Yes. Yes, I have.
Kind of interesting story. They talked about, I interviewed them because they're going to be at the Art Center of the Ozarks on Friday.
Okay.
Fun, fun group. They talked about they always play Blowin' in the Wind.
Mm-hmm.
A Bob Dylan classic, obviously. But the reaction to it has turned over in the 40 years they've been playing together.
I bet.
It used to be that the young people sang along and the older ones looked kind of grumpy, and now the older ones sing along and the young ones look puzzled.
Well, that will happen.
But they also say that a lot of people don't, the younger audiences, which is what they're at ACO for,
right,
have never heard the kind of music that they play. Like the Charlie Sandage kind of music.
Mm-hmm.
So they're trying to do songs that the kids will like and understand, you know, about being green and about who the kids are, who their people are, which is not a concept they get. They will perform at 7:30. Well, they'll perform several student shows as part of the Serendipity series for schools. And then they'll perform at 7:30 on Friday. Friday's the 29th, right?
Yes, it is.
On Friday. I'm a little confused this week. And admission is $16 for non-member adults and $9 for non-member students. And if you've never been to the ACO, you know, they've had a big facelift.
Oh, comfortable seats.
And it's looking all nice and spiffy.
Yes, it is.
Comfortable seats and carpet when you come in. And they're not done with the outside, but the inside's looking great. So, and you'll hear all sorts of eclectic music, which they decide on the fly.
No set list.
No set list.
I like
and
that.
Probably a little Dylan for good measure. Going on this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
It's the last day of Devil's Den Rocks weekend,
right,
at the park at Winslow, including reptile cuisine at 1 o'clock and vulture finger puppets at 3. There's drop-in drawing from 1 to 4 at Crystal Bridges. That's mm-hmm. free. Clayton Conversations this afternoon is about the history of Fort Smith's natural gas industry.
Yes.
That happens at 2 o'clock at the Clayton House Museum in Fort Smith. They suggest reservations at 783-3000. Today is Easter at the club.
Which club? Boys and Girls Club.
Boys and Girls Club in Fayetteville. Egg hunts, a duck grab, frisbee golf for ages 2 to 11, and it's free.
Mm-hmm.
And tonight is the closing celebration of the Goddess Festival at 6:30.
Boy, it seems like it just started.
It does.
Yeah.
At the Omni Center in Fayetteville. That's when Antoinette would say, man,
time flies.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers. This is Weekend Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me is Katie Henriksen, who is the host of tonight's and every Sunday night's edition of Sunday Symphony. Welcome back.
Good morning.
It's been a while since you and I have talked.
Yeah, because Christina's been doing the Sunday shows.
Right.
So, yeah.
Right. She's gone this weekend. Well-deserved rest. What will we hear tonight?
We have an interesting pairing. We have a Leonard Bernstein symphony, The Age of Anxiety. It's his second symphony for piano and orchestra after Auden. Hmm. So his movements are named after phrases in the Auden poem called Age of Anxiety, as well as Rimsky-Korsakov's Scheherazade.
Oh.
Which, you know, that for me, that makes me think of my childhood because it's one of my mom's favorite orchestral pieces. So I remember growing up on the weekends, and she'd put it on the stereo. And
well, I think whether you had a parent or sibling or relative or friend who did that or not, it reminds you of childhood. It's one of the classical pieces you first hear as a human being, I think.
Yeah, it's very bold and it's kind of carnivalesque, and it's got a lot of flavor. It's just really exciting, and you know, it's Scheherazade. It's after the 1001 Nights, and right. So it's got the Eastern influences and everything. So
I don't know if this is a proper word. Some people might grimace at this. It's fun.
No, it is fun. Yeah.
It's just fun.
It's bold and fun, and it's inviting. It's just, there's not anything in there in any moment of it that would make you go freak out or whatever.
Right.
It's
right.
Like, it's bold in the sense that it's exciting and fun and something that even a little kid would, like, no one would get scared at any second of it.
Accessible.
Yes.
Very accessible. The first one, Leonard Bernstein.
Yeah.
Who will be performing that?
This is a performance from, it is from the New York Philharmonic, led by Leonard Bernstein.
Wow.
And then the pianist actually is Philippe Entremont, who actually came through here. It was a little bit, not long after I started, because he was coming through. He was a conductor of one of the symphonies who played at Walton Arts Center. So I interviewed him but prior to that.
My.
So Philippe Entremont is like a huge pianist of the 20th century, and then later on he became a conductor. So,
any idea when this was recorded? Do you have that information?
This one, yeah, I have the liner notes right here. It was recorded July 19th, 1965 at Manhattan Center, New York City.
Oh, fun.
And so this is actually, Bernstein, it says he wrote this in 1948-49. But then he went back and decided he was going to revise it in 1965. And in the liner notes, he apparently thought he was using too literal of a translation of Auden's poem. And mm-hmm. So he kind of wanted to work through that and make it a little more his own and not be so literal directly relating to Auden's poem.
It can happen after 15 years.
Yeah.
Go back and look.
Yeah, and the luxury of being able to go back is, and see how you do it differently, for sure.
And the Rimsky-Korsakov performed?
This one is a performance actually from the Philadelphia Orchestra, conducted by Riccardo Muti.
Oh, so superstars.
Yeah.
All right. Tonight at 7 yes. on KUAF. Thanks, Katie.
Thank you.
This is Brooke Gladstone, and on the next On the Media, we consider what it might mean if WikiLeaks leaker Bradley Manning is convicted of abetting the enemy.
This means that every time you leak a national security document that can be accessed over the net from everywhere, you are indirectly communicating with the enemy.
That and more on the next On the Media.
On the Media, today at 11 on KUAF 91.3 FM. In just a few minutes, music recorded inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio earlier this month. But first, our latest Sunday montage. Thursday marked the 50th anniversary of the closing of the infamous Alcatraz prison. That's all the inspiration we needed to mine for one of Hollywood's standard storylines, Crime and Punishment. So here are 10 snippets of pop culture related to jail, Alcatraz, and one clip devoted to the institution's most infamous resident.
Almost a year since you escaped.
But I haven't escaped. They're still after me. They'll always be after me. I've had jobs, but I can't keep them. Something happens. Someone turns up. I hide in rooms all day and travel by night. No friends, no rest, no peace.
Oh, Jim.
Keep moving. That's all that's left for me.
I hear something saying. That's the sound of the men working on the chain gang. That's the sound of the men working on the chain gang.
I guess anything you want bad enough is worth the chance,
including busting out.
How many men are buried out there? You wouldn't even know, would you?
Then, one spring day, an old friend came back. Runty, the hell are you doing back here? Too tough out there, huh? Come back for a little prison security. Guess you're a lifer, pal, just like me.
Well, I found out last Monday that Bob got locked up Sunday. They've got him in the jailhouse way downtown. He's in the jailhouse now. He's in the jailhouse now.
What draws my admiration? What is that which gives me joy?
James!
Baseball!
I hear the train a-coming. It's rolling around the bend. And I ain't seen the sunshine since I don't know when. I'm stuck in Folsom Prison, and time keeps dragging on. But that train keeps rolling on down to San Antonio.
If you'd like to see the list of our clips selected for this morning's montage, you can go to OzarksAtLarge.com. This month, the Oxford, Mississippi-based duo Waterliars played a show at Nightbird Books in Fayetteville. Just a few hours before that, they came to our studio to talk to Katie Hendrickson and play a few songs. Here's one performance from that session that we couldn't fit into our daily show this week. Here are the Waterliars, Justin, Pete, Kinkle Schuster, and Andrew Bryant.
Well, this song is called The Hanging Gardens.
I've seen
Andrew Bryant and Justin Pete Kinkle-Schuster are the duo Water Liars from Oxford, Mississippi. They played inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio this month during a visit to Northwest Arkansas. They'll be back in Fayetteville for an all-ages show June 29th at Nightbird Books.
Some kids are afraid all the time, which can lead to violent outbursts, even to a psychiatric hospital.
I was strapped down at the ankles, across the chest, and at my wrists. I remember screaming and screaming and screaming.
I'm Steve Inskeep, an experimental drug to help kids overwhelmed by fear on the next morning edition from NPR News.
Morning edition, tomorrow morning from 5 until 9 on KUAF 91.3 FM. Tomorrow at noon on the daily edition of Ozarks, Arkansas's history as recorded by TV.
Generations yet unborn will benefit from the prosperity which this program will bring to the Arkansas River Valley.
To me, he has no alternative. We have none but for him and his vice president to resign.
I want you to know today that I consider myself to be among the most fortunate people in this country. I grew up in an ordinary working family in this state.
McClellan, Fulbright, Clinton, and more. We go into the archives of Channel 7 in Little Rock with the director of the Pryor Center for Oral and Visual History, Randy Dixon, to hear the voices of Arkansas's past 50 years. That's on tomorrow's all-new edition of Ozarks at Large at noon and 7 p.m. with your host tomorrow, Antoinette Grajeda. Earlier on this program, I promised a chance for you to win a free weekend pass for two to the Blues in the Natural State Festival. It takes place the weekend of Friday, April 5th and Saturday the 6th. Here's the question. What year did the Ozark Blues Society form? You can, I bet, find the answer at the website ozarkbluessociety.org. Now, once you have your answer, email it to ozarksatlarge@gmail.com. Again, email your answer to ozarksatlarge@gmail.com. All winners will go into the ceramic cow, and we'll pick one out and announce it on tomorrow's show at noon. Don't forget, the Arkansas Razorback women's basketball team continues playing the WNIT tournament this afternoon at Bud Walton Arena at 2. Arkansas defeated Memphis 67-57 in the first round Thursday night. They play Tulane later today. And late this past week, a big announcement from the AMP. The band Old Crow Medicine Show will perform at the AMP Saturday, May 4th. Tickets on sale now at waltonartcenter.org. This is KUAF Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, Van Buren. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums. Thanks so much for listening. Join Antoinette Grajeda tomorrow at noon and 7 for an all-new edition of Daily Ozarks at Large.